Hi, my name is Randy Ramesh. I'm the Social Affairs Editor of The Guardian. I've got with me today Karen Jennings from Unison and Jennifer Dixon from the Nuffield Trust. We're talking about the market-based reforms that Andrew Lansley's introduced. Karen, Andrew Lansley himself describes these as market-based reforms. What's your view of competition in the NHS?
Unison's view of competition in the NHS is that it won't work. You will have those that do very well, that will become centres of excellence, and you will have those that fail. And that's just a risk too far for an NHS which is built on the founding principles of free and equal and at the point of use, and is a comprehensive universal healthcare system. So competition has no place, we believe, in the NHS. We want an NHS that collaborates, that's based on solidarity, and that delivers standards of care that are understood right across the UK.
Jennifer, is there any examples where competition does work in healthcare?
Well, there's quite a lot of evidence now internationally which looks at competition for clinical services, typically competition amongst hospitals. And the evidence is pretty clear-cut. It shows that where there is competition for prices, and then quality suffers. But where there is fixed price competition, then quality improves, provided that the fixed price is above marginal cost. And that's a pretty consistent finding internationally, and we've had two major studies here which have also demonstrated the results. So on that basis, the evidence suggests that competition is worthwhile pursuing, as long as it's fixed price competition. But nobody knows the strength of competition that really is optimal. And in a health, in a service, a business, if you like, or an enterprise like the health service, health is very different from other forms of commoditization from firms, and bond markets don't work well, we all know that. So how to mitigate against some of the worst outcomes, including some of the ones that Karen suggests, which is about a failure, you know, how to protect the interests of patients when organizations might fail, is pretty important to bottom out if you're going to promote competition.
Isn't the problem that new treatments don't have a fixed price? They don't have a tariff that can be set by anybody. So there is effectively competition on price introduced in a lot of the new treatments that come into the NHS.
Well, I think that that is a technical detail which then needs to be sorted so that there will be, as soon as possible, that a new treatment comes down the line, that there will be a fixed price set. But I think that proportion of new treatments are actually quite small compared to the whole clutch of other services that the NHS provides. So I suspect it's less of an issue than one might think.
Karen, you said that there are many pitfalls with competition, but one of the benefits surely is that the NHS will innovate. Isn't that something you'd welcome?
Well, the NHS has always innovated. The NHS has been extraordinary in terms of some of its innovations, and many other countries look at us. For example, the National Institute of Clinical Excellence, our keyhole surgery, the primary care that the NHS delivers is second to none anywhere else in the world. But to look at the NHS in terms of innovation at a time when we're going through austerity measures, when we've got to make what we now know is up to 7% of savings per annum, I think that it's going to be very difficult in those circumstances for us to innovate, but also very difficult in terms of competition. And what we're going to see is rather basic developments in terms of competition and saving money. So we'll start to see, for example, education and training cut, which is vital if you want an innovative modern service. And we're going to start to see services cut, because in times of austerity, what goes first are staff or staff's pay, terms and conditions, because that's where most money goes in the NHS.
Jennifer, just in terms of the $20 billion that the government's looking to find, what are the big changes in, say, hospitals that we could see that would promote those kind of efficiencies without harming patient care?
Well, there's a whole set of things that can be done to improve the efficiencies of various processes, for example, that are predictable, for example, elective care, you know, general sort of operations that aren't emergencies, use of theatre time, your optimal use of staff, making sure patients have a very short length of stay, better discharge planning and so on. So there's tons to be done in that area. But one of the biggest areas is how to prevent the use of costly hospitalisation in the first place through better upstream care in primary care, community nursing and so on. And that is a huge area given the rise of long-term conditions and the ageing of the population. And that is the biggest area that I think needs to be tackled. And this is where integration may hold better promise, integration of care to offer more seamless care, patient support at home, better self-management. And there's huge scope for that to really help us. And I suspect that that will create bigger efficiency savings than will the elective care efficiencies that you mentioned. But the critical thing there is back to the question about competition. What makes individuals innovate so that they will every day work hard to try to improve effective and efficient care? And all the evidence that we read of suggests that there are two main areas. One is the professionalism of the consultants or the clinicians themselves, but that is not sufficient. There needs to be some kind of external challenge. The external challenges have in the past come from top-down direction on the National Health Service. You know, you will reduce waiting times. But then the other external challenge, if that is if the top-down one is reduced, is the external challenge from competition, which is why it's now being more introduced, because the top-down challenge will be reduced because of the suggestions in the bill. So that's why we need a healthy blend of incentives, both internal altruistic from professionals as well as external on the organisation from competition and from external regulation, command and control, or indeed competition.
Do you think command and control is better than competition?
I think both have serious failings. I think what we've got to look at in the future is the altruistic element of clinicians and other staff in the NHS. But I think what we need actually is far greater solidarity. We need a far greater engagement with the staff themselves. Staff are never listened to. It is always top down. And competition, by the way, may well be an incentive. But when the competition is based on money and the lowest amount of money that's available, then it does start to create perverse incentives. So there's all sorts of types of competition. It doesn't have to be a competitive market. All the evidence demonstrates that a competitive market actually creates winners and losers, and we don't want that in the NHS.
Jennifer, I think you've been an advocate for change of hospitals working together to provide better care. Could you say where that model works around the world?
Actually, I haven't been an advocate of that necessarily, but what we have been an advocate of is better integration of chains of care, if you like, across primary and secondary care, networks of providers that work together more closely. We've had a historic divide between primary and secondary care, for example, and between community services, and that really needs to come together now. But in that collaboration, there should also be external challenge coming from competition. So we believe that the unit of competition, if it's pursued, is not the hospital or the practice, but actually an integrated network of providers. Then we believe that the efficiencies and effective care will increase, particularly for people who have long-term conditions and are older people with complex chronic disease.
And where has that worked?
Well, there are very good examples in the US. These are islands of excellent care: Kaiser, Geisinger, Intermountain, Group Health, for example, the Mayo Clinic. But the interesting thing about these examples is that they're pretty unusual, and they've taken years, often decades, to develop. But one of the there are a number of reasons that make these things work, which could be suitable and appropriate for the National Health Service. One of them is that they take a capitated fund and are at risk for that capitated fund. They are run by groups of clinicians, primary and secondary care. They have financial incentives inside them that are aligned towards achieving all the right goals. Those are some of the, they have a strong sense of mission and sought in clinicians of the right altruism into them. And all this takes time. So the corollary there is that if we develop this over here, it's not going to happen anytime soon. It's going to happen over a decade or so. And it simply won't be the result of a bill that's suddenly put through Parliament.
Karen, in answer to that, there are islands of excellent care in the US. Is that something that you could see develop here?
Our system is unique. It's unique because of its founding principles and the length of time that the NHS has been running since post-Second World War. We have an outstanding healthcare system. There is no system in the world that is perfect. We have to look at governance and, you know, we have to look at how we're going to continue to improve. But what is crystal clear over the last three decades is that tinkering around and major reforms actually cost a huge sum of money. And what is absolutely crystal clear is that patients still need healthcare and the staff that deliver it are the mainstay. And what we need to do is listen to them, engage with them, but make sure that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And that is that we continue to pay for our NHS through taxation and that we ensure that it's comprehensive and continues to work in a way which doesn't fragment it. The market will fragment the NHS and create a system where the private sector will begin to take hold in a way which we will then not be able to have, will no longer have control over what we want for the NHS.
You'd probably like to see the bill amended so that Monitor promoted collaboration rather than competition.
Oh, absolutely. And in addition to that, I would want to see the Secretary of State remain responsible for the NHS and to Parliament for the NHS. However, we would still want localism introduced. And that means that the primary care trusts that exist would continue to exist, but would work in a collaborative way with clinicians and users and the community in a better way. And by the way, primary care trusts were starting to do that. We don't need these reforms.
Karen, Jennifer, thank you very much.